Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm working on my new intro, so just please be patient with me. You guys, it is Saturday, and it is the last of Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Church here on the Say Your Peace Radio Network with your host, Salita. And we are presenting to you through the eyes of the black woman. All right, you guys. Well. We're here on Saturday. It's Saturday, January 19th. Can you believe the mid-month is already gone? We celebrated last week, and I didn't get a chance to say it. Martin Luther King's birthday. Happy birthday, Martin Luther King. Some people will be celebrating and be off tomorrow, Monday, the 21st. I think the federal government will be off Monday for his birthday. And I think that is the same day of the inauguration ball, right? I think so. Okay. Anyway, so you guys, we're at the end of Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Church, and I want to thank everybody who's listening in, who goes back and listen to it. I want to thank you guys for everything. I enjoy this book, and this is how I like to do things. I don't necessarily always have to have the author in place, but when I go back and find some books that I've actually interviewed these authors before, I like to be able to stop and do an in-depth on it, and I think we did an excellent job on this book, even though, you know, lots of times I read a lot because you can't see the book, you don't have the book in your hand, and these are just my opinions of what I'm getting out of the book opposed to me actually, being there when the guy wrote the book, when the doctor wrote the book. But anyway, I think this is a great book. I think all churches should have it. I think that once we finish doing the back part, the last of it, of the eight rules we went over, and we go back and summon. I even gave us some more time tonight. I think I'm going to do an hour and 30 minutes tonight so that we'll get some music in, because I want you guys to enjoy tonight. If nothing else, let's enjoy it. Let's close it out this week with some good music, and I think I want to try to start doing that every time I shut down the show on Saturdays. And hopefully Monday I'll be back. I don't think I have anything scheduled for Monday, but hopefully I won't, and we can go ahead and, get this done, start on our next venture. Like I said, on January 24th, we have Miss Ernestine Moore coming back, which is the author of, I can't even remember the name of the book. It's Silence. I can't remember the name. I'm going to have to press it up. I'm going to have to put it up. Very good book. I talked to her today, so I'm really excited. Okay. Then we got some more people. You got February coming up. You know that is the month of love. So what I want to do is I'm probably going to dedicate the majority of that month to either Black history and love. I think they're great combination of both, okay? So, let's finish up this eight rules, and then we'll start having fun after we go back through the whole thing, okay? Now, let's go back over rule number one. We were talking about know thyself, be very, very, very familiar with who you are and what you want. In the person you're not yet, but you want to be. Rule number two was, thou shalt love one another as you love yourself, which agape or Christian love must be the foundation of a fulfilling sex relationship. Christian love is the kind of love that is willing to serve others. As we know who we are, we become able to better feel the needs of those around us. Since we can know and ask for what we need in a sexual way, we can return the favor to our loved ones, the ones we love, we're intimate with. Not with the whole world, but with the person that you're intimate with. And on this section, it says the key word is respect. Okay. Number three says, thou shalt love thy body as a gift from God. It says, it is important to not to fall into the historical trap of being overly spiritual and overly bluesy. And we talked about, we're going to go back to the bluesy and spiritual thing. We're going to go back to that. It says, the traditional sexual ethics of Africans was regulated by the sense of responsibility both economically and socially. The primary function of sexuality was to increase the human population and to give pleasure. The sexual act has the power to increase the emotional bond between partners. The pleasure of sexuality can serve to strengthen and reinforce the sense of closeness in the family. Now, you guys, I'm telling you right now, if you want to call in and talk to me or make some comments, you can call in at 347-677-1749. That's 347-677-1749. And if you're interested in having a show on the Say Your Peace Radio Network, you can check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/Say Your Peace Network. Okay? Just trying to plug. Got to plug my show. Okay. Then we're on the point where that's three. Now, let's talk about four. It says, thou shalt maintain professional boundaries, which I told you was very, 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 to me, very important. African Americans are clergy and other helping professionals must be careful to maintain appropriate physical and emotional boundaries with those who they have developed a close relationship with during the times of personal and social crisis, which I explained to you why that's very important and that there should be a book of ethics or a pamphlet of ethics to any new orientation, any new parishioners or members of a church. It should be part of their orientation to learn the boundaries of the pastor and them, which all the new orientations I've ever went to, never heard anything like that, never seen any policies, never heard anything like that, which I think is very, because one thing, again, we hush-hush about sexual abuse of power in the church. Okay, number five says African-American men shall love African-American women first and foremost. And I had an opportunity last night to quote, and I posted this part in here that really hit me that I was very familiar with and I thought was very, very important. It is, it's true that you can't help who fall in love with, but African-American men should remember African-American women have sustained us through slavery and discrimination and loved us when no one else would. Now that African-American men are no longer endangered species, African-American men should give priority to loving and marrying African-American women. This love cannot be commanded, but should be freely given, not as an obligation, but as a celebration. I thought that was so lovely, so well put, so awesome to say. So I posted that, and I got a lot of comments from it. A lot of people liked it. I thought it was an awesome statement Dr. Matthews made. Now, here is the bigger. This is the big kicker. Number six states, rule number six states, thou shalt practice safe sex and only bring children into the world that you can love and take care of emotionally and financially. I can't wait to read this. Responsible means of birth control will be practiced to prevent the arrival of unwanted children. Unwanted or unwise pregnancies are the biggest stumbling blocks to the future of our community. Sexually transmitted diseases, including AIDS, are destroying the lives and reproductive abilities of many African Americans. Condoms should be worn at all times, especially if the couple has not been tested for sexually transmitted diseases, and there is the possibility of multiple partners. Lovers should learn how to please each other without sexual penetration as the only option or goal of lovemaking. There are a myriad of ways that lovers can experience sexual pleasure without the need for sexual penetration. Wow, that was deep. I wasn't looking for that, but the first part I really liked. Okay, Rule number 7 says, thou shalt love thy gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender neighbor as thyself. Now, I got to really read this. The African-American community must no longer fall prey to the false standards of patriarchal bias and heterosexual discrimination that comes from a threatened patriarchal masculinity. It must educate itself to the biblical interpretations regarding human sexuality that has not been affected by the patriarchal ideology that has distorted the meaning of sexuality in Christian love. We must develop more faithful interpretations regarding sexuality and be critical of outdated judgments and biases that are no longer applicable to our day and time. That the first non-Jewish Christian in the Bible was the Ethiopian eunuch, a man of African descent and of a different sexual orientation. He was also the servant of one of the African-American queens of Ethiopia. We were brought into the kingdom of God as full members who represent the diversity and equality of all God's creation, regardless of race, color, or sexual orientation. The down-low phenomenon in the African-American community has harmed African-American men, women, and families because African-American men don't want to limit their chances of having a family and risk the social stigmatization of being seen as homosexual. They have developed a practice of lying to potential mates and spouses. This has led to an increasing level of AIDS, HIV infections among African-American women who have had and are having sex with their partners without realizing that they may be having sex with men who are not protecting themselves from HIV infection. This situation is extremely destructive to the physical and spiritual security of African-American women and families. Gay males must take responsibility for their sexual attitudes and behaviors so that they, at the very least, they will not engage in high-risk sexual behaviors with other males and do everything possible to protect their spouses from infection. In the meantime, the African-American community must come to terms with the meaning of sexuality and begin to develop a non-punitive and appreciative stance toward those persons whom God has created gay. It is tragic that a community that has experienced so much oppression due to its biological differences in terms of skin color would penalize others who are naturally different as well. Number 8. No abuse, love does no harm. Any relationship that is based on hurting someone else is wrong and should be avoided, terminated, and reported as it continues. There can be no room in the Christian ethic of love for relationships in which persons are being physically, psychologically, or emotionally abused. The human spirit was meant to soar, not to demean and limit it by persons who would use others solely for their own needs. The abuser often tries to silence the victim or even to convince them that they are responsible for the abusive relationships. The abuser may threaten or try to convince them that without this relationship, the person would have no relationship at all. It is in the abuser's self-interest to convince the victim that they are not worthy of love. However, love does no harm. A relationship that is based on humiliation, degradation, and exploitation is not love, but represents a deep sickness of the human soul. My wish for the reader is that they will find a relationship that is worthy of their status as the children of God. This is the end. So we have just went over the 8 rules, of sexual abuse of power in the black church. Now, we're going to stop. You know it's 7:15. It's time for the music. We're going to have a great, great conversation and lots of music. So, I am going to get started with, I think this is Curtis Mayfield. It's called Black Enough.
I'm not. To invite you to join our team by becoming a host. For more information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your PIECE Network. Have you thought about hosting your own radio show? If so, visit our website at sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpiece network. That's sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpiece, PIECE Network. We will return with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We'll be right back.
wondering if you ever gonna show me. I don't know if you're gonna show, my darling, I got to go. But nevertheless, I said, you gotta be waiting. If I have any sense, something tells me I'm a fool to let you treat me so cruel. But nevertheless, I say again, you gotta be waiting. If I have any sense, something tells me I'm a fool. Let you treat me so cruel. Nevertheless, I said, you gotta be waiting.
You're listening to Through the Eyes of the Black Woman.
All right, you guys, we are back. I'm hoping you're loving the music. I thought I said let them listen to some old stuff, because this is my era. I understand you got your rap and your other music out there, but this is my era and this is my show, so you either listen to the music or turn the channel. Now, I just thought I would say that this is Salida here on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. And now, we are ready to summarize and go back and talk about why this book came about. Why did I pick this book? This book was on my shelf. This person, I had already interviewed him on my show, on the local radio station when I was with them, on Lee's Author Showcase. So I said, you know what? It's sitting on my shelf. I think it would be a great book to talk about on my blog talk radio. So what I want to do is, since we've already gone through the book, I thank everyone for the comments, questions, and things that they needed to say or ask about. If you want to call in, 347-677-1749 is the number. And we're getting ready to go back and recap. I said summarize, but we're going to recap. Okay. Let's see. The introduction of this book was basically this Dr. Matthews is a pastor or a minister, and he has degrees in master divinity degrees in sociology, psychology of religion, specialty in ethics, and Divinity School of University of Chicago, Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, Theological Union. Oh, man, this man is very, very much so well-degreed, okay? And he thought it was very important because he said it was not being talked about sexual abuse of power in the church, which we know it's there, just everybody's not talking about it, up until something happens, right? So I'm going to start out with, I'm just going to knock out some points. I'm not going to go deep into it. It says, he talked about, first part he talked about sexual abuse in the church was he identified two major psychological conditions that contribute to the sexual abuse of power by pastors and other religious leaders. And the church, he said these two conditions are, one in sexual boundary violations and two with sexual perversions. Those are two things that he found that was going on in the church that was not being recognized. It says persons who have difficulty maintaining appropriate boundaries with the others can also be engaged in sexual perversion. So they can be suffering from both conditions. Wow. It says persons who are sexually perverted are by definition violating boundaries of others. So these two intermingle with each other. Okay, he says, ethically speaking, any behavior in which a person is used as an object is abusive. That's basically what it is. There's no other way of saying it. It is abusive. He said here, too, that because the pastor is a primary role model and the leader of the congregation, he sets the terms by example for ethical or unethical behavior in the church. His actions will have a profound effect on the spiritual and psychological well-being of the church and community. Although all instances of sexual abuse of power is deplorable and damaging, it is also especially true when this behavior takes place with underaged youth. Therefore, the first condition that I will address in the issue is from a sexual perversion, the form of sexualization of young people in the church. The first two narratives, oh, we're not going through the narratives because that's about, the first narrative was about the young lady who went to her mom about her stepfather having sex with her, and she didn't believe her daughter, so she ended up taking it to church. When she took her to church, the pastor literally did the same thing. So she was caught between a rock and a hard place because she wound up dealing with both. Then they became ostracized in church. Nobody wanted to deal with them because it's a taboo, or it's none of our business what the pastor's doing to you. And how dare you? We put him up on a pedestal. We worship him. He can do no wrong, but yet and still you say you believe in God. So who do you worship, God or man? And I say that all the time, and I mean it, and I'll say it to any pastor, I'll say it to anybody. Who do you worship, God or man? Who's more important to you? You have church members that will fight you over their pastors if you said something that you know is true, but they don't know it. And because they don't want anybody else to know it, it's nobody's business, I'm going to continue to do my thing, and they're going to continue to protect me. But if someone comes and confronts them, they want to fight the person who's confronting them. Crazy, but that's how it is. Okay. It says, one section says, sexual abuse of a child by a church official. Wow. It says several of the women knew of many instances of sexual abuse in the church, and so they raised that as a question of the conference. He was in a conference with males and females, and this was one of the conversations that they had. It says the ensuing discussion revealed how little conscious that the seasoned and experienced ministers had of the destructive role that they and their peers had been playing in their churches. The culminating story brought the house down as one more prominent ministers attempted to show how understanding, helpful, and compassionate he had been when dealing with this problem. He told a story, this pastor told a story about one of his young ministers that was having sex with somebody in the church, and instead of him putting charges up against him, or pressing charges or allowing anybody to press charges against him, they blew it off and told him, he put him on probation and da-da-da-da-da. Nothing was really done. It was like almost swept under the rug. Nobody talked about it. So what? Nobody did anything about it, which is crazy. Okay. Now he talks about interpreting a pastor as sexual predators, and we know that is possible. He says anti-psychological bias. Child molestation has no place in the church or family. The presence of anti-psychological bias in black churches has contributed to this problem. One of the reasons why it has been so difficult for black communities to deal with this issue is due to the well-known and documented anti-psychological stance of black communities. There is some justification for this suspicion of psychology due to the past tendencies of the helping professions to use models of psychological development that did not take into account the social and psychological cultural characteristics of African Americans. We were not including in this. Keep that in mind. It was not unusual for sociologists and psychologists to label black behavior as deviant. Got to remember the mindset of how people felt about us as blacks. And blacks exhibited family structures or behaviors that did not meet the standards white middle-class cultural norms. For a long time, there was also lack of qualified helping professionals in the black community, which meant that a persons and families suffering psychologically based trauma and illnesses had little opportunity for treatment. Instead of seeking professional psychological help, the tendency was to resort to the church or other folk-based remedies to deal with instances of mental problems and illness. So you took it to the church. Not even keeping in mind that sometimes your pastor doesn't have it all. Okay? We don't keep that in mind. We don't talk about that. And it is the blame of us when we're on these committees, quote unquote, and we hire these people in and not doing a real good background check. We know the HIPAA policy is in place. HIPAA policy means that you cannot disclose any of the medical records of anybody, period, okay, Safety Privacy Act. But if there was any criminal charges against this person dealing with sexual abuse, then it should be told, it should be public record, and you as the person or the committee that is getting ready to hire this pastor, minister, whatever, and you're putting him over a congregation, not only are you putting him over a congregation, you're putting him over individuals, you have to take into consideration. See, me, I would not only sue the pastor, if it was me, I would also sue the people who hired him, point blank. I would do that because that is your responsibility to check, to do a background check, a thorough background check when it comes to sexual ethics or sexual boundaries have been crossed. That's your problem because you put them in place, so I blame you. Okay. It was apparent that those who were in front lines in treating and working with black children and families were black women and had a strong spiritual foundation who were also equipped with psychological knowledge, which means we try to keep up with stuff. We try to. It is also suggested that their pastors were at least one step removed from suffering of the children and families in their communities and were much less prepared to deal with their psychological issues. The churches must find ways of bringing these two groups together for the benefit of the African-American community. That is so true. That's why I just said what I said about putting people in place that know what they're doing, know how to do the background check, because guess what? The pastor really doesn't care about that. I'm not saying he doesn't care, because there are a lot of heartfelt, caring pastors out there who have no reason whatsoever to step over their boundaries, and some of them know their boundaries, but there's a lot of them from the old school that have no boundaries, and they think because of power, they can continue to abuse the person. That's just how it is, and this book keeps saying it over and over again. It says, and I said this earlier, this is page number 10, black churches must be open to the possibility that they have hired someone who is not psychologically fit to be a minister. I love that phrase because it's so true. The silence around sexual issues mean that many clergy have been hired without proper screening by hiring committees. This lack of oversight and silence regarding sexuality in general in the black church may contribute to the fact that many instances of sexual abuse by ministers may be unreported, ignored, or excused. Man, ignorance is bliss. Okay, now we're very much familiar. This is the confusion of homosexual behavior with child abuse. You know, oh, he's homo. No. It says here, we know about the idea that the priest were having sex with the boys in church. And it's a misinterpretation that homosexual behavior, let me make sure I'm saying this right. One of the problems in the black community is that there is a tendency to see issues of sexual abuse of children as a result of these priests' status as celibates. I have heard many members state that if the Catholic Church would have just allowed their preachers to get married and engage in sexual relationships, then they wouldn't need to abuse young boys, which that is totally not true. This is an example of lack of clarity regarding issues of sexual abuse of power in the Black community, because that's an assumption we made. We never clarified it. We never found out if it was true. We made an assumption. Okay? It says this is the same lack of clarity was seen in comments about regarding Eddie Long. We talked about Eddie Long coming about crying, doing the whole nine yards, and then being praised and worshipped, and the church was packed. They were there packed. I don't know if they were there being nosy or were they praising. They were standing up clapping, so somebody was paying attention, and somebody was there for that reason, and I don't understand. Okay. One of the most frustrating teaching moments, he was saying, while he was teaching seminary students, that they insisted that these priests abused children because they were homosexual, which they weren't. Because they believed that homosexuality was a grievous sin, they confused homosexuality activity with homosexual abuse of male children. People are misinterpreting or missing the point of homosexuality. It's not about them being homosexual. We looked over it. We're looking at the ideal that there was sexual abuse of power that took place with this Eddie Long situation. Sexual abuse of power took place, and we overlooked that in this whole situation. Okay? Let's see. Here we go. Let's talk about poor emotional boundaries and sexual abuse. It says, he said his observation is that this is a major dynamic that is responsible for most acts of sexual abuse in the church. I will present several examples and now I'm going to go into that one because this leads to inappropriate sexual relationship, persons, and man. Okay, let's talk about violation of sexual and emotional boundaries. Clergy are involved in the most emotionally intimate levels of human relationship as they discuss major life issues with their parishioners. This can create feelings of closeness and familiarity, which can easily lead to an overstepping of emotional boundaries. When you're sitting down talking to your parishioner or member of your church about some personal stuff going on, especially when you deal with women. I'm saying women because I am a woman. And if you're sitting down talking with them and you're telling them all their intimate and you got this mindset, oh, man, she told me all this stuff that she ain't getting and what he ain't doing and how he ain't doing it, and I'm sitting here in the position I'm in, and oh, my God. Well, let me tell you something, young lady. You are a beautiful young lady. Don't let nobody ever tell you you're not. You already overstepped your boundaries because you have no right and no reason to be talking to her like that. That's one thing, because that's how it starts off. Now, I know you're having problems with your husband, but you let your husband know you're a beautiful woman, and you don't need to go through all that. You know, we're sitting there, and we're listening to him filling your head with this, and before you know it, oops, let's have dinner together. Let's go for a ride, you know. And maybe I need to let somebody know, that's all right, don't let nobody know you're going. Those are the things that you have to think about when the overstepping boundaries happen. Okay. It also says, in addition, the antisocial psychological bias leads Black pastors and parishioners to deny the importance of adequate boundaries in favor of folk beliefs and the knowledge that they may have been functional at one time but are no longer adequate to prevent sexual abuse of power. Maybe at one time, when you first start out, you know, Pastor, come on, now you guys, I'm your friend, but there is something, you know, we'll say that. Then after a while, we get used to our position, and we kind of get lax. And before you know it, you're saying things, you're taking people out to lunches, you're hanging out with the crew, and you're doing stuff. Before you know it, you've already overstepped your boundaries, relationships happen. I don't say relationships, I want to say sexual abuse starts to happen. I'm not going to give it relationships. Even though two consulting adults are involved in it, it's still sexual abuse because you're the hierarchy, which means you're the pastor, and these are your members, and you have no right to be doing that. That's when it falls into place. Okay, what I'm going to do is I want to stop right here. We're at 7:50, and I want to play you some more music because I'm feeling a little music in me tonight.
be just a foolish dreamer, but I don't care, 'cause I know my happiness is waiting somewhere. I'm searching for that silver lining, horizons that I've never seen. Oh, I'd like to take just a moment and dream my dream. Oh, dream my dream. Oh. I'd like to know the taste of honey in my life, in my life. Well, I've shared so many pains, and I've played so many games. Oh, but everyone finds the right way somehow. together and we'll get it undone someday when your head is much lighter. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday when the world is much brighter.
Reality, the one I love, leaving me. loving you too much, not wanting to realize that you're in love with someone else.
Sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gonna stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. And I know, hey, I'll leave the young thing alone, but ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, it's just house just ain't no home.
Remember, ain't no sunshine when she goes. All right. I had to say that. Okay. You guys, we are back here on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman from your Say Your Peace Radio Network. And we are talking or concluding the book, Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Church, with me, your lovely host. Okay, so we left off on the discourse of sexual abuse. It says the ideal that pastors should expect to have sexual relationships with their parishioners are common among black clergy and church persons. They have convinced themselves that it is natural for clergy, in most cases male clergy, to violate appropriate sexual boundaries. This folk perspective is thought to be an alternative to more puritanical white views of sexuality. So what we're doing is, because white folks say, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, well, you know what, this is our church, we're black, we do it the way we want to, and this is how we're going to do it. We don't want to fall into the same boundaries or have the same boundaries as the white folks do. We're going to do what we want. Then you have started to destroy lives. You start bringing in unwanted babies. You start committing adultery. Shall I go on? All right. It says African-American male slaves who, were forced to have sexual intercourse with their female community members in order to produce more slave children for commerce and labor on the plantation. And this is where this came from, this whole concept came from, the sexual violation of black women, men, and children in which slave masters exploited the black body for economic benefits and physical pleasure, destroyed family bonds and boundaries that regulated appropriate, loving, intimate, proper sexual activity. within our family or within our units. Okay? And this is how this happened. This is why it was all right, excuse me, to do what you wanted. It says right here, it says, this means that black males as well as females suffered the destructive effects of sexual abuse of power. Slave narratives are consistent on this issue as they relate how black males felt violated by the system of slavery, which required that they sexually violate the black female community members. Now, with lingering effects that may have had on the black male psyche, it's open to conjecture, but it may have contributed to the present prevalence of sexual abuse of power by the male clergy. You're mine, I can do what I want with you, duh, period, because this was already instilled in them. Sexual practices and attitudes in Africa. As we know, and we talked about this before, about the in Africa, a woman's body was off limits. It was considered beautiful. It was sacred. You didn't have a right to violate her. Men, the male African males did not learn how to violate until they came here because they were in big trouble if they did it in Africa. Because all of our history, our heritage, our traditions were stolen from us. This is what the end results. Okay. Now, let's talk about transference and co-transference. Transference, black folk culture and ethics. Most professional codes of ethics are built on an acceptance of the need for healthy emotional boundaries between helping professionals and their clients. Again, the question that I asked was, if your doctor or your dentist was putting their hands on you in an inappropriate way, would you tell on them? Lots of you would say, hell yes. Okay, let's put that over on the pastor. Lots of you will say, no, I'm not telling. Because you automatically know there is already in your brain, it's always been taught to you, that what goes on in the church is our business. We don't go tell nobody. With the fear of being ousted by the rest of the church members. I know. But my thing is, I think I'm much more important than any other church member. I'm sorry. My spirit, the way I feel about myself, my self-esteem, everything about me, my psyche, my everything is more important to me. And I know that I haven't done anything wrong. So if anybody wants to accuse me of something, then you go ahead. But I think I'm more important than anything else when it comes to that. Okay. Now, we're talking about, okay, it says right here. It says, most codes of ethics state that there should be a prohibition against sexual contact between the professional and the client. This is important for several reasons. The first reason is because there is a tendency for that person being helped to develop feelings of dependency or attachment, which is considered transference to the professional who is in position of power. These are often sexualized feelings in which the client believes that he or she is in love with the helper. And they may project their feelings so that they may believe that this love also existed in the helper toward them. So automatically, this is the stage that is being set for the drama to be played out on. Okay. These feelings create an ideal that they are special and are the leader's favorite. Like a teacher's pet, for instance. If the leader is not careful about maintaining appropriate boundaries, the desire for closeness makes the parishioner particularly vulnerable to manipulation and exploitation by the helper who is in the greater power relationship. So, you already know he's explaining to you what you need not to do, but yet and still we do it. Not me, because I'm not a pastor. I'm not male. There goes female pastors and ministers too. No. But it happens. Now, this effect, first described by Sigmund Freud, is called transference. Now, let's talk about countertransference. Now, this is when the helper also projects their feelings on the client, onto the client and acts in such a manner that violates the boundary between the client and the patient. This is often sexual, but it can also take the form of other issues that may be alive in the unconscious of the helper, such as treating the parishioner like a spouse, girlfriend, son, daughter, or friend. And that's why you have to be careful. Oh, he's like a son to me. Hold up. Or she's like a daughter to me. hold up. No, this is like my mom. Hold up. Oh, you've already overstepped your boundaries. Certain things we should not say. And because we are not familiar with the language that should be used between us, this is what takes place. And it's so easy for the manipulator to go ahead and, pew, he's in. Knock, knock. She's just like my daughter. You know, and you say to yourself, you wouldn't have sex with your daughter, but some people will. I'm just saying it like it is. Some people will. And that's what happens. Mm. Okay. That's why countertransference, and well, first of all, for transference and then countertransference, that's why you have to be careful on what you're doing. You have to. It says it's often sexual, but can also be formal. Okay, we already said that. Okay. The next thing is pastors who violate these boundaries may often suffer from a narcissistic, listen to what I'm saying, pastors who violate these boundaries may have often suffered from a narcissistic psychological attitude. Okay. Ministers' egos inflate as they find themselves the center of their parishioners' attention. A classic symptom of narcissism and countertransference is when the pastor develops the ideal that only the pastor can help the person in need. No, that's all right. Calm them down. You just bring them to my office. I got them. I got to bring them to my office, sit them down, get them a drink of water. I'll be in there to talk to them in a few minutes. You go in there. Lock the door behind you. Don't. I'm locking my door. Put a do not disturb sign on it because we're going to be in private. Automatically, right then and there, you have no witness there. You have no deacon there. You have no deaconess in there or whatever you want to call them, usher, whatever, in there with you while you're talking to him. That's automatically no-go. You got to be careful with that. I know. You got to be very careful with that. Okay. Then it says, pastors as helping professionals. Persons not only tend to put their trust in their pastor as loving and trusted father figure, they often come for help from the pastor when they are in emotional need and vulnerability. You're having problems with your wife or husband or whatever, and you find you want to go talk to your pastor. And I think with me, I've always been very weary of that. I don't think I should be talking my personal business with my husband to anybody but my husband. I mean, when it comes to when you're dealing with people in those positions, you have to be very careful. You just got to be careful. It says the pastor role is the father figure projected of husband and lover. We talked about this, and like I said, she's just like a daughter to me. You know what? You're just like my husband. Be careful when you're saying those kind of things, okay? I'm just letting you know. It says in order to continue to discuss the issue that relates to the black pastor, it is first necessary to understand the unique role of the black pastor plays in the black community. Pastor has been more than just a religious leader. The pastor has also been seen as a kind of father that guides the church. The historical and contemporary destruction of the black family by slavery and historical discrimination has led to the pastor becoming an ever-increasing paternal figure in the church and community. So he's taken on almost like a whole other role. You know, not only is he supposed to be preaching and teaching you, now he's the person right up under God. I mean, sometimes we put him above God. Mm. Black mothers have especially looked to the pastor as a role model and substitute father-daddy role model for their children. Boys and girls who may not have a positive male or role model are shown the pastor as the father figure and has been missing it in their lives. See, that's what we do. We women want to do that. We want to put the pastor over our children, you know. And all the time, the pastor is manipulating and doing his little thing. Go in there and talk to the pastor right now. You better tell that pastor what you did. Go in there and talk to him. You pushing him into that situation. He don't really want to talk to the pastor. She don't really want to talk to him. But you're pushing them because you think they're being stubborn and rebellious. Little do you know, this same pastor has been touching your children inappropriately, but you continue to take them to him. Oh, go in there. Slam the door. You know, not even saying, you know, why don't you want to go talk to the pastor? Because he's having a bad day today, and I just want him to talk to you. Why don't you pray with him? Be him. some things I'm just going to, even though I know this is my chart, I can say what I want to, but I got to sometimes just kind of calm it down because I have a habit of saying exactly what's on my mind a lot of times. Okay. So, now, he also states in this same category, pastor's role as father figures, he says he has often heard black females minimize sexual misconduct of the pastor by claiming that he is just a man or that men with power have always cheated. I have heard many such justifications, but when these persons come to understand that they would never tolerate it if a father had sex with his children or that husbands should have free rein to engage in as many sexual encounters as possible, then they begin to see why a pastoral abuse of power can have such a negative consequence. It takes somebody else on the outside to show you, hey, hold up, this is not right. What are you doing? When we can face it and say, you know what, this is not fair. I don't feel right about this. I'm going to tell somebody, get out. Let's stop this right now because it's getting out of hand. When we do not do this, it is prevalent. And we allow certain things to happen that should never, ever, ever happen, period, in no situation. But it does. And there's end results of that. Okay. Now, let's see. I'm hoping you guys have learned a lot. I pray to God you have. And do not be surprised if I revisit this book for certain things. Now, before we go, I got 90 more minutes already. Since it's my show, I can add more time on if I need to. Anyway, but before we go, further, because this is time, we're going to talk about the low down. We're going to go over the down low minister. I'm sorry. Let's see here. Oh, 609.
Hello, how are you? I believe in the Holy Quran. I'm not burning those gas cards. I still have it. I'm not laying on the Pentagon steps. I'm not hanging the statue of Linda Johnson. I'm not burning American flags. I'm only following the law.
Hello? 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 Anyway, I'm 609. I was expecting you were going to say something, but I didn't get you. But anyway, let us thank you for calling in first and foremost. Do you hear me, 609? Hello? I guess he can't hear me. Okay. I got another song real quick. I want you.
I want to be me and Mrs. Jones. We got a thing. Know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there. Holding hands, making all kinds of plans, while the jukebox plays a favorite song. Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing. It's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We gotta be extra careful that we don't build our hopes up too high. 'Cause she's got her own obligations, and so do I. Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing. But it's much too strong to let it go now. Well, it's time for us to believe it. It hurts so much inside. Now she'll go her way, and I'll go mine. Tomorrow we'll meet the same place, the same time. Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We gotta be extra careful. The same place, the same cafe, the same time. And we're gonna hold hands like we used to. We're gonna talk it over. We know, they know, and you know, and I know that it was wrong. But I'm making it strong. We gotta let them know now.
Okay, you guys. I thought that was a very appropriate song, and I dedicate that to all you pastors out there who are overstepping your sexual boundaries. That's to you. You got a thing going on with me and Mrs. Jones. You need to stop it. If you are not on no judgment seat, just telling you the truth, you can't believe in God and commit adultery, I'm sorry. I don't see it any other way. It's wrong. Okay. We had a caller call in. I did not understand completely what he says. When I go back to listen to the show, I'll see what he said, but I didn't understand what he said. It caught me totally off guard, but 609, I think that was the number. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for your comment. Call in anytime. 347-677-1749. All right, you guys. Okay, African-American sexual ethics. This is talking about the down-low minister. I'm not clapping in happiness. I'm clapping it to introduce it, to talk about it now. It says, the down-low phenomenon is the hiding of same-sex sexual preferences by black males from their families and communities in order to avoid the likelihood of social rejection and oppression. He said he found out the down-low black ministers to be pervasive in the community regardless of region. This one lady was having problems in her marriage and discovered that her husband was cheating on her with other women in church, with other women in church. But she informed him that she knew that he had the failings of most men and she was willing to remain in the marriage, but that it was important that he protect himself and not endanger her life by bringing home STDs or HIV/AIDS. So in other words, she accepted him in spite of what he was doing. She said, it's all right. Just don't bring me nothing home. Well, my thing is, sorry, I don't think the ideal. So you're saying to me is, he's doing it. I'm going to continue to have sexual relationships with him because he is my husband, regardless of what he's doing. Just don't bring me home no STDs or HIV. What? Huh? But see, that's why a black woman is a black woman. So, because that couldn't go for me, but to each his own. Then she says, however, she returned home one day earlier than expected and found him in bed with a male lover. Wow. Okay. She ordered him and his lover out of her house before the children came home and announced to him that their marriage is over. Now, this is the problem I'm having with this whole scenario. She thought it was all right. She would have been fine if he was having sex with women, which already crossed the boundaries and created some problems in the sanctity of the bed when it comes to a husband and wife. But now that she finds he's fooling around with another man, oh, my God, all hell breaks loose. I don't understand. What? Do you understand why I say what I say? I don't understand. It was all right, just long as you don't bring no HIV or STD home to me. You can keep having sex with the women in the church. Huh? And then you still go to the church. You get up every Sunday morning, get dressed, and you go and you walk into the same sanctuary where the man that you're married to is having sex with your church members. You're probably walking around not speaking to each other, being mad, having an attitude, getting out on the parking lot and fighting, going crazy and stuff. But you're saying it's all right. But it changed when she found out that he was on the down low. Now she don't want to have anything to do with him. You should have did that when he was sleeping with the women. What craziness is that? But that's not. Okay. It says, let's see. She was not only disappointed with his lack of respect of discretion by having his lover come to their family home, the fact that he was a minister who preached against homosexuality and that he was exposing her to the possibility of HIV due to his failure to use protection during sexual activities was a breach of trust that she could not accept. His hypocrisy and deception, as she put it, had taken away my choice. He had taken away your choice when he slept with the women in the church. What? Is it me? It's got to be me. It's got to be me. Because I don't get it. So you know what? While I'm thinking about it, we got 24 more minutes to go. I got to play this because I think this, I'm going to dedicate it to this lady. Because this, to me, was a dumb move. Okay, here we go.
Ba-ba-da, ba-ba-da, ba-ba-da-da.
special someone right by my side. It may be all just a dream.
I just don't wanna be lonely.
But one day,
I'd rather be loved.
She'll come along.
Needed,
and when she does,
I
would fill her with all my joy.
When you're gone,
I would give her all the love.
When you're gone,
so wherever you are.
About you, girl, I just can't live without you.
that I thought was, I'm sorry, Miss Lady, whoever you are, I'm sorry. But you guys, real quickly, you have 14 more minutes. I just thought I had to get all my songs out for today. I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's all of them. Okay, this is what happened when she sued for divorce. Guess what? He begged her not to get the divorce. Then he went and hollered and screamed to his associates, and they got their wives involved in the congregation, and they begged her not to divorce him. What? Are we warped or what? Huh? Got the whole congregation together to say, don't reconsider this whole situation. Man, what? I wonder if some of these congregational members was one of the ones he was sleeping with. What? Hold up, you guys. 323. Let me let them in. Hello? 323, are you out there? Okay. Guess they're not talking. Okay. Anyway, I'm like sitting here like, what the? Huh? They're convincing her not to get a divorce. Oh. So do you think we have some issues? We have some serious issues. 347-677-1749. They left. I'm not hearing anybody when I'm talking to you. You're not answering me back. I don't know. I'm just like surprised. Okay. Now. Okay. Oh. She made a mistake, did not mean to, left her camera on, and actually, 323, let's see if I can get them to talk. 323?
What's going on, family? I heard it said on mute. Maybe you guys can hear me now, hopefully.
Yeah, I can hear you now. I got you.
I'm coming in on the last part of the discussion and whatnot. When you guys were talking about the Booker situation, you know, and stuff like that. So I was just now catching it.
Okay, I'm talking about sexual abuse of power in the black church. I'm summarizing now because I'm done with it already, but I'm going back through and kind of making some points.
Right, because like, you know, Bishop Eddie Long and all of those, other, the long list of the abuse of power when people look up to him, again, allegedly, you know, again, because he settled out of court, so you know, I'm saying, but there is an abuse of power in the church or something like that. But how come you don't hear the women pastors or women bishops getting caught like that? Because I know it's got to be going down on that end as well. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Like, do you think that the women pastors and the women bishops are doing the same thing? If so, why aren't we hearing about it, or why is it more hush-hush?
Okay. It's more hush-hush across the line. I did mention that it's probably our women doing the same thing. The problem is, this is the problem in what he's trying to explain to us in the book. Everything is hush-hush.
Right.
It's not. It's a social norm for us to do this. That's the whole point of the book. He's telling us it's not. It's an ethical boundary that we keep violating. Well, they keep violating as ministers in church. It is like a given right because of their authority that it's all right for them to have sexual relationships with their members in the church, whether it's male or female. It doesn't matter, or children. We hush-hush it. We go to church. We believe in these pastors. We put our whole life up under them. And this is what happened when that is not their job. Their job is to be over our spirit. That's it. All this other stuff that we involve them in, we're not supposed to do that. It's not, you're not supposed, it's not appropriate as a husband and wife, y'all having problems, okay? This is just an example.
Right.
When you go talk to him, he shouldn't be in there by himself with the woman, and he should not be in there by himself with the man, even though men don't always necessarily go that way. But in this part that I'm reading about, it's talking about the down low brother. Okay, so there should be some boundaries, ethical boundaries, because you tell me this, you answer me this. If you go to your doctor and your doctor touches you inappropriately, are you going to tell?
We probably be fighting. I'm just saying. We'd probably be fighting.
Okay.
Just be real.
Now, why did we let our pastors do the exact same thing and nobody says nothing?
Well, I was, you know, I came up in a church situation wherein it's a protectionism going on. Like, you know, when people mess up like that, they say, well, you know, it's bigger than you because that's the pastor or whatever, and it can make the whole church look bad. So the Bible says forgiveness. And they'll talk about, you know, scripture where it says don't take the saints to court and stuff like that, you know, and they'll talk about it's your duty to put the church before your own personal self. So that's why they make people stay in these abusive relationships. They stay under these pastors or whatever because, you know, it's a protectionism going on wherein they say rebuke not an elder. They got all these scriptures out that protects these pastors that makes the stomping ground for them to continue that behavior because they know that, you know, who's going to police them? That's why a lot of these pastors don't get into organizations because in an organization, other bishops are over you and you are accountable to somebody. So, but if they got their own church and they own organization, they're not accountable to anybody. And, you know, and that's what's going on now. That's why you see a lot of churches pulling out of organizations, and you see a lot of churches on Blog Talk Radio because they don't want to be accountable to anybody, so they pull out of these organizations and they commit these sins or whatever, you know, for lack of a better word.
That's awesome. You did an awesome job in explaining that because you answered every question that I had and everything that he's been saying in his book. You said it. That's exactly what the problem is. Be pacified because he's the pastor. People will get mad at you if you say something about their pastor.
Right.
They will get teed off on you if they talk about it. But because I witnessed it, I know it happened. Somebody tried that same stuff with me and he was a pastor. I nipped it in the bud. But I learned that this is really happening and nobody is doing anything about it. We're pacifying it. This pastor, the story I'm talking about, and she found out. Now, this is my problem with her. It was all right for her, for him to have sex with the women in the church. She said, as long as you don't bring me home no disease. But it started to become a problem when she came home and caught him in the bed with a man. What point is she missing there? He was wrong from the get-go. How are you going to
do
that? And that's what we black women do. We accept our men doing these things. And then the congregation, she said, you know what, now that you're doing it, I'm getting a divorce. Well, the congregation convinces her, reconsider the divorce. What kind of crazy crap is this?
Wow. At the end of the day, like Ayanna Denzel says, she taught him basically how to treat her. You know, when she kept letting everything go on and on, you know, because you teach men how you want them to treat you. You show them that. And if he found out he can get away with that, then he said, okay, well, let me do this. So she has to bear some of that blame as well, you know, in that situation where she's not just the victim because she's an adult. She's grown. And she can't say, they made me. There's an accountability on her because she's the one that got to live that life and go home to that. So there's an accountability that she has to own some stuff, too, and say, you know, what did I teach him that it was okay and why didn't I leave? Because people can just give you opinions, but they don't, you know, they ain't hold no gun to her head and say you had to stay there. You know, so there's some accountability, like, with this protectionism thing. And I call it, like, Stockholm Syndrome. When you fall in love with the one that's holding you hostage, and you think you own some you owe some loyalty to them, and they're treating you bad, but you think you owe them loyalty. When you, in actuality, you know, you hurting yourself by staying with that abuser or whatever, you know, whether it's mental abuse or whatever and stuff like that. So I think, you know, that people listening to this call right now that's in that situation, you know, you can say people told you to stay, people told you whatever, but at the end of the day, you have to own your own act. Life is about choices, and do you choose to listen to them, or do you choose to actually leave? So some accountability is going to be with you.
Exactly. And then it's another story in here, also dealing with the download minister. She went to the minister, talking to her minister about what's going on in her household, her husband acting this way, da-da-da. Come to find out, he was the one he was sleeping with.
Wow.
Come on.
Wow, R. Kelly got another joint for this one in the closet. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
one of them chapters.
She complained to her pastor, and he's the one he's sleeping with. And it's just so sexuality is such a, it's a taboo. So this is the reason why a lot of African-American women are getting AIDS. That's why we have the number one AIDS, is because these men are sleeping with these other men and not telling them because of the social outcast that takes place once they say, I'm homosexual or I'm gay. So this is why things are happening, you know. Man, I wish you would have called it earlier. I wish you would have called in earlier, man, because I'm down to 3 minutes. Ow! And I'm
right.
What I'll do
is I'm going to go back and listen to the beginning of it in the archive. This was one of them topics and whatnot that I was like, wow, this is 2013. It's still going down. It's not outside the church no more. Now it's inside the church.
And it's up to them, it's up to the pastors to find an ethical boundary when it comes to their parishioners and their members of their church. There should be, each time you go through a new orientation in the church, that should be one of the policies. That they know where their boundaries are. Because in every orientation I've ever been to, we never discussed it.
See.
Because he's a professional. He is still a professional. He's like a doctor. He's like a dentist. He's like a teacher. He has a position that he's holding, and he needs to know that there are boundaries he cannot cross or violate. And they don't. It's never talked about.
Well, usually when that behavior is still going on, there's usually an enabler. Someone's enabling him to continue that behavior. Like, is it the missionaries? Is it the preachers, the pastors? That someone's protecting him to make him think he can still do it. Like we hear in the Catholic Church all the time. They just move him to another parish or whatever, you know, stuff like that. So he has an enabler. If it's continued behavior, and the thing is, it didn't just start with that person. Chances are, just like the Tiger Woods thing, if you put it out there, a lot of other people are going to come forward, you know, stuff like that. So he had an enabler to make him think that it was okay to do that or keep doing that. He felt safe, you know, in his congregation. Like, these people are going to protect me.
Yes.
Well, he wasn't protecting them.
Thanks for calling in. Exactly. Thanks for calling in, 323. I enjoyed this conversation. Go back, listen to the rest of it. You'll see what I'm talking about. If you want to make comments, you can catch me on Facebook. It's under Salita McCall. You can catch me on Facebook. Let me know what's going on, how you felt about the whole show. I want to thank you again. I won't be back until Monday night, but this is Through the Eyes of a Black Woman with your host, Salita, and I want to say good night and thank you again, and bye-bye.
Peace.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.